This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. 2016, big year for film. Action blockbusters like Rogue One, sci-fi thrillers with Arrival, and powerful dramas like Moonlight. And these are just a few of the movies listeners picked as their favorites from the past year. And for this month's edition of Movies on the Radio, we're going to talk about their choices and more with film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Marcia is a film professor at NC State University. Welcome back, Marcia. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
And Laura Boies, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Happy New Year, Laura.
Happy New Year, Frank.
It is the new year, a whole new year of film, so we're taking a quick look back. Was this year extraordinary? How different was it from other years in the world of film, do you think?
I mean, my personal feeling is that the films from this past year were a lot better collectively than I remember in recent years. I mean, I feel like I saw more movies this year. I was, you know, more enticed to the theater, and then I was happier when I left the theater as well. And I mean, one of the things that I've spent a little time thinking about, well, was what you know, brought these films together, right? What made them so exceptional? And I noticed a kind of thread of more films that were about kind of compassion and empathy and feeling and understanding. Not across the board, of course, right. There's plenty of exceptions, but so many films seem to be kind of grappling with how we can kind of better understand and be more compassionate about each other and about the world. And I think that that's a pretty important message right now.
When we're talking about award season's films, most of them are very small, character-focused films, much more so than, you know, a giant biblical spectacle or something of that nature.
Well, Marcia, your pick was a documentary, in fact, 13th, Ava DuVernay, of course, documentary that looks at race and mass incarceration.
Yeah, so I one thing I just want to note from the outset about 13th is that this was not a film I saw in the theater, and very few people could because it had a very limited theatrical release. This was a Netflix-commissioned documentary, and so it streamed almost instantaneously online at the moment that it was released. And so this is a real change in terms of distribution methods that we've been seeing inched towards for many years now. So this is a documentary that's focused on the 13th Amendment, which, of course, abolished slavery after the Civil War, with the caveat for people who were basically convicted of a crime and imprisoned. And so this is a documentary that makes a very important, very compelling, and well-told argument about how that the focus on criminality has been racialized, basically, so that African Americans in particular have been imagined and kind of turned into criminals by the American judicial system and political system and laws. And so the clip that we're going to listen to happens towards the end of the film. And if to give listeners some context, if you remember at some Trump rallies, there were people that were protesting Black Lives Matter, for example, who were evicted from the rallies. And so you'll begin by hearing a little bit about Trump, and then you'll hear some commentary by Van Jones.
In the good old days, law enforcement acted a lot quicker than this. A lot quicker.
And we're going to enforce the law, and Americans should remember that if we're going to have law.
I am the law and order candidate.
We thought, I mean, they called the end of slavery Jubilee. We thought we were done then. And then you had 100 years of Jim Crow terror and lynching. Dr. King, these guys come on the scene, Ella Jo Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer. We get the bills passed to vote, and then they break out the handcuffs. Label you felon, you can't vote or get a job. So we don't know what the next iteration of this will be, but it will be. It will be. And we will have to be vigilant.
Yep. Yeah, so DuVernay directed Selma, which was a really interesting film that came out last year. And so this documentary makes an argument about basically the prison industrial complex and the privatization of prisons and the kind of crisis place where we are today. And I think it's just wonderful and important.
And it's so helpful to have a really skilled director making the case, mm-hmm. because there are many documentaries that have great information but are not really compelling enough to watch. And that's really an important way to communicate.
Well, Laura, your pick. Let's move on to yours, which is a musical, La La Land. And in fact, why don't we play a clip? This is the song City of Stars from the film La La Land.
A rush.
A glance.
A tide.
A dare.
skies to open the world and send me real. A voice that says I'll be here and you'll be alright. I don't care if I know just where I will go, cause all that I need's that crazy feeling I got tapped out of my heart. To stay.
Clip from La La Land, film curator Laura Boy's pick for best movie of 2016. She's here with Marcia Gordon for Movies on the Radio. How come?
This is a richly referential homage to old Hollywood films with a wonderfully modern edge. It brings out the surreality of the whole musical form, but at the same time grounds it. You heard Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, who are not the greatest singers in
right.
the world and not the greatest dancers in the world, but they really elevate the fantasy to a really remarkable level. And I, you know, have watched movies from the 50s. It's like nobody will sit still for a dream ballet like at the end of An American in Paris. But Damien Chazelle makes you do it. And it's a movie that halfway through I thought, I wish this movie would never end. It was just so great.
Well, I mean, I agree. It was very, very entertaining. And I think he does an amazing job with color and the referentiality. I mean, he has things like the Astaire Rogers challenge dance that you always get in those. And lots of stuff like that harkens back to Jacques Demy, including the color palette. So this is just, if you are a fan of musicals, this is just going to be a pleasure for you. And actually, I think it's a great entree for people who have never watched a musical into the genre because it's very accessible.
Well, music in La La Land, of course, but not the only film that focused on music this year. Let's hear about the film Sing Street.
My name is Bruce Naraki from Raleigh, and my favorite movie of the year was Sing Street. It was directed by John Carney, who directed Once and Begin Again, and it's third in his series of movies about the redemptive value of pop music, and stars a 15-year-old who tries to impress a girl he meets, telling her that he's in a band and wants her to star in this band's music video, and then he realizes, oops, I don't have a band.
Here's the tape.
What's this?
Oh, it's a song. I mentioned it to you.
Oh, you're the kid in the band.
Yeah, you should probably learn the lyrics so you can lip sync to them properly. It's called The Riddle of the Model.
That's really sweet.
Oh, no, it's not about you. It's about another model I know.
Huh. It seems like it's a great focus on the joyful reminders of what the limitless possibilities of youth might offer at the time, and just full of a bunch of great 80s style music as well.
Grooving on music from the 80s, eh, Laura?
Drive it like you stole it, man.
Well, this is music of the 80s. La La Land takes us back 50 years. Does the era of the music, I mean, do you think the success of the film depends a lot on the era of that you're choosing if you're going to do a musical?
Well, I have a personal theory that actually, interestingly enough, harks back to a documentary that was shown this year, Life Animated, about Disney movies, is that there's a whole generation that has grown up on Disney musical cartoons, starting with The Little Mermaid through Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and all of this. And it's given a tremendous entree to the musical to come back mm-hmm. into consciousness because they're so important in childhood that people are open to musicals in a different way.
And in La La Land, I mean, Ryan Gosling is in this bad, cheesy 80s cover band as part of the film as well. And so, but Sing Street, I mean, if I can just say, Sing Street is a great surprise. I mean, I didn't know anything about it going into it, and I so thoroughly enjoyed it. And another thing I liked about it is it's about the kid that's bullied and picked on who ends up being like the super cool kid.
There are a lot of bullies in movies this year.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't avoid them. Sing Street is so totally adorable,
yeah,
and
I
had many people tell me that I had to see it because it was the best of the year.
Well, here's another choice that a listener chose.
My name is Amy Laura Hall. I live in Durham, North Carolina. And my favorite movie of 2016 is the movie Moonlight. I thought it was a beautiful, delicately drawn story about a real life. It follows the story of a boy to a boy becoming an adolescent to an adolescent boy becoming a man.
You're my only. I'm your only.
No. You gonna listen.
To who, Ma? Huh? To you?
Who is you, man? I ain't seen you in like a decade. It's not what I expected. What did you expect?
The story is not the heroic comic book story of a boy being brave. It's rather a story of a real life, and it's so beautifully and subtly done. And I really hope that many people go to see this important movie.
Amy Laura Hall talking about the film Moonlight, important movie?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the cinematography was gorgeous. The story is important. It's very compassionate. It's very patient. And just the story of growing up in kind of adverse circumstances and dealing with personal identity and tripping and falling and stumbling along. This is a story that has not been told in this way before.
Tell you what, we'll talk more about Moonlight and other films, listener picks, and, of course, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys with us. Movies on the Radio continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Movies on the Radio, looking back at the best of 2016, listener picks as well as theirs. And we were just talking about the film Moonlight that focuses on a black man coming to terms with his identity. His sexual identity, of course, plays an important part in this film. Laura Boys, what did you make of this film?
Well, one thing that's striking is how dreamy and slow it is. And so many films that deal with this topic, drugs, inner city youth, they're very loud and fast and confrontational. And this one has a completely different feeling, very introspective. You could hear from the clip that the music is gorgeous and very unexpected. Everything about this film is unexpected.
I feel like the last few years we've seen so much like hyperkinetic filmmaking, rapid editing, and yeah, overwhelming noise and things like that. That to see a film that is told so patiently, so slowly, and yet so engagingly, I mean, this is a really, and I've seen this in a number of films this year, Certain Women, Kelly Reichardt's film, which I thought was absolutely fantastic, about three women trying to make connections to other people. Same thing, slow, patient. And I'm really glad to see maybe a backlash against constant hyper kinetic films.
Well, and they're doing well. And so the idea is that not only is this maybe director's sort of a director backlash, but apparently, you know, people who go to the movies want to see something different too. And this next film, I think, is more evidence of that. And this is the film Loving.
My name's Dana Stone, and my pick for best film of 2016 is Loving, which is based on the true story of Richard and Mildred Loving of Caroline County, Virginia. They ended up going to the Supreme Court to argue their case. They were an interracial couple. The film is really sensitive in that it captures the love between the couple. You can really see this portrayed in the characterizations of the two actors.
I want to put the kitchen back, right back here.
Richard, stop this. I don't know what you're saying.
I bought it. This whole acre. I'm going to build you a house. Right here. Our house.
Richard and Mildred were quiet country people. Richard, in particular, was a man of few words. But Joel Edgerton really gets the character of this man across in the film.
You know, Richard, it's of course up to you not to attend, but
You should know the Supreme Court only hears one out of every 400 cases. It's historic.
Thank you, Mr. Cool.
Well, is there anything you'd like me to say to them?
Yeah. Tell the judge I love my wife.
Dana Stone was talking about the film Loving, and we are talking with film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies about the best in cinema from the past year on Movies on the Radio. Yeah, talk about that, man, a few words. And again, the slow pace that characterized many of the movies this year. I mean, I wonder how much that has to do with a news year, an election cycle in which the noise was so loud.
We're so exhausted.
This is where the medium is the message. We're just, you're going, the escape is from just the sheer pace and the frenetic pace of the media.
Well, this film, even though it's set in the past, it's based in part on a documentary by Nancy Bersky, a local filmmaker. And it's so topical because the conflicts around interracial marriage, of course, are directly reflected into the conflicts about same-sex marriage. So that even though you're given the comfort of a historical setting, the topic is absolutely vital and current.
Yeah, and I think anytime you're making a film about something that most people feel is such an injustice, it's a really smart way to reflect on the things that maybe not everybody feels the same about. And at a time when our own state is grappling with, you know, making legislation that makes it hard for people to feel comfortable in their daily lives and to have the same rights, I think it's important to tell stories that we go, oh gosh, what was wrong with us as a country back then? So always in retrospect, there's these kind of lessons to learn.
Yeah, mapping those stories where you can absolutely agree and, as you say, see that with the injustice and map it on today's legislation, but also movies that set the record straight and allowed you to understand that these things are not just in the past, that they flow forward and have an impact on what happens.
And it also seems to me that we are at a time cinematically where there is so much conversation being had about race in America, and it's something, you know, this is a subject for, you know, we could do 20 shows about this, but, you know, between even what we've talked about today, the O.J. Simpson Made in America documentary, 8 hours, fantastic documentary that's really about, I mean, it's about O.J. Simpson, but it's also very much about race in America. I'm really glad that conversation has kind of filtered both into fiction and into nonfiction filmmaking in such a powerful way this year.
Let's talk or hear from a listener who chose a film from New Zealand as their favorite, The Hunt for the Wilder People.
My name is Tricia Platanian. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. My favorite movie of 2016 is Hunt for the Wilder People. And this was from New Zealand film director Taika Waititi. It's about a little boy in the foster care system who was placed with a family that was kind of like the family of last resort for him, as he had had lots and lots of behavioral issues. It was a quirky movie with a lot of laugh out loud moments, but also a lot of really, really poignant moments.
Come on, give me some bars so I can communicate with the outside world.
Ricky, take a look at this.
Oh, Uncle, we're famous. Hector Faulkner, 65, and Richard Baker, 13, have been missing now for 6 weeks. Faulkner is Caucasian. Well, they got that wrong because you're obviously white. There is a fear for Faulkner's mental health following the recent death of his wife. Police are not ruling out kidnapping. Kidnapping? Park rangers have been alerted for anyone seeing the pair should report back to the nearest police station. Oh, Uncle, you're basically a criminal now. But on the bright side, you're famous.
I think I'm crazy.
And Asian.
The film we're talking about is The Hunt for the Wilder People with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies.
And that was Sam Neill as the older person there, longtime Australian film actor. Great.
This film is so funny and it's so endearing. I mean, this was another surprise film for me. I had no expectations of it going in. And it's about a kid who needs understanding and compassion, and he gets it from this kind of outsider community, this couple that decides to take a chance on him. And it's really about coming to a place where, like, a family and love is created out of very unlikely circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a Shaggy Dog story in a way. It goes on and on, and I wanted to mention another one of my favorite Shaggy Dog stories of the year, which is The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe, which played for a week and tanked. And I thought it was hilariously funny, really fun. So,
do you have any thoughts about why it didn't do well?
I don't know. Isn't it all marketing? Mm-hmm. Is that why people go it, so. Or not go to the movies? I mean, it had a 70s setting. And
we also have such short theatrical run times now that it's like if you miss it in a week, you know, sometimes
right.
you don't have another chance.
If something else comes out the same weekend and you only, you know, did your $12 million instead of your $22 million,
right.
then they pull you out of the theaters immediately. I mean, most of the films that I love this year only play for a week.
Yes, me too.
You should have gone twice. Well, that was a foreign film, again, done in New Zealand. And here's another one. This is the Swedish film called A Man Called Ove.
My name is Madonna Phillips, and I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. I really, really enjoyed the movie A Man Called Ove. He was a familiar character, I think he would be, to most of us. A curmudgeon living in a neighborhood with lots of rules nobody follows. And the movie could have been very sentimental, but with a great performance by this actor who played Ovi, it was different than that. You know, it had a lot of humor in it, even though it was very dark. And what it said to me was the value of your friends and neighbors. He was kind of a grouchy man living among some young families, and he was experiencing a lot of grief from the loss of his wife. But through interacting with a lot of the neighbors, he found a life there.
Madonna Phillips talking about the film A Man Called Ove, and we are talking with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys today on Movies on the Radio.
Yeah, I mean, this was another film. I mean, there are some very sad parts of this film, and also the best cat, I think, in any movie of the year. Actually, as I understand it, played by two cats, one sullen and reticent, the other one a little more active. Anyhow, that's more than we needed to know. But this is another film about what it means to make the extra effort to bring someone into your universe and to offer them compassion, right. even if they don't seem like they deserve or need it, that everyone kind of needs that, and that can be this transformative thing that allows a person to kind of transcend their own unhappiness.
We all need to offer empathy and compassion to all of the people that we don't agree with.
Well, I mean, that's it. And looking at this kind of grumpiness as a symptom rather than sort of an irritation, right? It irritates me. But hey, this is not about the grass, is it? Let's talk, you know, and then you get down to what it's really about.
And also what the film shows us is that, you know, that we don't know what happened to him in his past until we're shown what happened to him to make him the person that he is. And isn't that the case with everyone? I mean,
right.
you know, we don't know what made you you and what made you you. I don't know all of your backstory, but everyone goes through things, and maybe by offering a bridge instead of standing off people, that's a more powerful tool.
It could be, but in Washington, it's quite a different tool altogether. It's better just to scapegoat and stick with the most superficial. And that is a little bit of what happens with Miss Sloan.
My name is Denver Hill. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm the business manager for Ambassador Entertainment. That includes the Rialto Theater and Mission Valley Cinema. My favorite movie this year was Miss Sloan, starring Jessica Chastain. Well, she plays a D.C. lobbyist who's forced into a moral crisis. And what I really liked about this movie was it showed that you could be smart, beautiful, and a good person. And it's one of those rare movies about Washington politics that is not cynical.
Lobbying is about foresight, about anticipating your opponent's moves, and devising countermeasures. The winner plots one step ahead of the opposition and plays a trump card just after they play theirs.
You better not be saying that when you're in there.
It's about making sure you surprise them. And they don't surprise you.
I'm going to ask you again. Miss Sloan, could you please describe the nature of your work?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer your question based on my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution.
When you're not taking the oath or confirming details, those words in that order are all you're going to say.
This would be a whole lot easier if I could just shout fifth.
They want you behind bars. You make one statement, you correct one nefarious allegation, that's it. You waive your right to the fifth, and you're compelled to answer everything. They're taking you to the woodshed in front of the national press. They're going to rile you so bad, they'd make Gandhi want to cut their tongues out.
The film was Miss Sloan. It was Denver Hill's favorite for 2016. Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys are with me.
Well, there were other films this year that also touched on contemporary issues. One of my favorites was Hell or High Water, which is a great pseudo-Western mm-hmm. about the criminality of banks and the reverse mortgage. And also A Hologram for the King, which starred Tom Hanks, based on a novel by Dave Eggers, which was one of those movies that played for about a week, about selling a new communication system in a Saudi nation that I thought was really, really interesting.
And let me say about Hell or High Water, too, it's kind of like a 1930s story that's kind of resurfacing in a modern context. And I thought one of the most interesting things is that by the end of the film, it seems that even, the side of the law and the banks has sympathy and understanding for the criminal acts that someone does in the name of keeping his family together
was
and
empathy,
solvent.
Empathy year in the films, yep. One way and another. Well, we didn't talk about a single sci-fi movie yet, but we will change that right now.
My name is Ina Wallace, and I live in Chapel Hill. And my vote for favorite movie of the year is Arrival. It is a not very typical sci-fi movie about some creatures from another universe and their encounter with a linguist who's played by Amy Adams. And as a former student of linguistics, I was interested in seeing the movie because it's the only movie I know of about a linguist. But Arrival was much more than that. It had many layered themes. The one that really got to me was the theme of prescience and whether to act on it.
Good morning. Today we are talking about romance languages. Any news you want to share?
8 hours after landing, there's still no signs of first contact. The objects measure at least 1,500 feet tall.
Mama, what's going to happen?
I don't know.
More objects like this have landed around the world.
Dr. Banks.
I'm Colonel G.T. Weber. You're on the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations. I have something I need you to translate for me.
The movie was so haunting, I couldn't stop thinking about it after I left the theater. Even had trouble going to sleep at night. I love the message of communication and understanding, which is something we really need to be mindful of in these present times.
Ina Wallace is telling us why she loved the film Arrival today on Movies on the Radio.
I really loved this film, too. I mean, first off, I thought it was beautiful. I loved the imagination of the writing, the language of the creatures. I loved the ships. I mean, I just thought it was beautifully realized. But then also, I love that this was a film about the triumph of intellectualism and thought, and not about, blowing things up. And that is a major rewriting of the sci-fi narrative, and that it all comes from this female linguistics professor is all the more awesome as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I it's such a relief that you don't have to see another landmark blown to smithereens as a sign of the aliens' power. I'm like so over that. But that female-centric power was just really interesting. And the one old sci-fi movie it reminded me of was A Day the Earth Stood Still. It's like, we have to work together or we're all going to die together, basically.
That one ends on a darker note.
A darker note, yes.
Well, and the triumph of intellectualism, pure Hollywood there.
Right, exactly.
That's what
Not
Hollywood
to mention Washington,
do.
Right?
Well, there's a thriller as well that made the list for our listeners. Let's listen to this commentary on The Witch.
Hi, this is Colby Hoke. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and my favorite movie of the year was The Witch.
I have come to steal you. Clackety-clackety. Like Philip Sif, you are wicked.
Does he really speak to thee?
We are your servants, we are your men. Like Philip keeps the lies from the
lies. This is not so.
I'm a huge horror movie fan, and I've sort of become disappointed with horror movies in recent times because of all the jump scares and all of the tricks that, I don't know, seem cheap to me. But The Witch doesn't have a single jump scare in that entire film. It's all atmosphere.
You've cursed this family.
Who's there?
It has some of the greatest writing I've heard, and I know that the writing was pulled from actual witch trials, which is fascinating to me. Also, Black Phillip, the goat, and the representation of the devil through most of the film is just, it's a great casting. It's an animal, yes, but it's a great casting. He steals the show.
The witch. Yeah. So cats and goats.
Cats and goats. I mean, I actually haven't seen this film yet, but I will see it. But honestly, that's scary sounding stuff. But it's interesting that, as Colby was saying, that this seems to be a film that's not, again, about that kind of frenetic jumping out at you, that it's more atmospheric, it's slower, has more patience. So I'm curious to see if this fits within the larger argument we've been talking about.
We'll talk a little bit more about this, and don't mean to cut you off.
No,
I'm just
too scary for me.
Too scary.
Laura will not be seeing this.
Well, we'll find out what she did see and what was not too scary for Laura Boyce and Marcia Gordon when Movies on the Radio continues after this. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, talking with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boyce. Movies on the Radio for the best of 2016. Their picks as well as yours. And one of those picks from our listeners was Zootopia.
This is Jenny Ellian from Raleigh, North Carolina. My favorite movie of 2016 was Zootopia, about a bunny that wants to be a cop and pairs up with a fox to try to track down a missing persons case, and along the way confronts a lot of challenges about what bunnies are expected to be and how she doesn't fit in and how she rises to the challenge.
I implore you, try. Try to make the world a better place. Look inside yourself and recognize that change starts with you. It starts with me. It starts with all of us.
Animated movies take years to make, and so this whole idea would have been pitched and started a long time ago when it opened earlier this year. The topic of stereotypes and discrimination against people that are different from us was a very timely topic in light of our election campaign.
That's Jenny Ellian talking about the animated film Zootopia, her favorite in 2016.
What? Well, it was definitely a lot of fun, and I loved the way each animal had their own little city that was their own size, but somehow they all coexisted on the same planet.
Yeah, you know, this fits into the theme, right? Working together, understanding, going through a process. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of hope that the fact that there are so many films that are dealing with this suggests that maybe that's something that we can actually start doing a little bit more of in this country.
Well, the thing I notice about all animated films, the good ones anyway, is the fact that voices are so much funnier. You know these actors, you know
right.
who they are, but they're just so much funnier when you see the animated characters that they're now representing.
This was Jason Bateman's best performance of the year.
That's what I mean. I mean, sometimes it's like,
maybe
wow.
of his career.
Possibly.
Dude. Well, here's a reboot of a movie that did quite well for its first time through.
My name is Sarah Jessica Farber. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and my pick was the Ghostbusters movie, the reboot.
There's something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
There's something weird.
I really enjoyed how it flipped the common trope of women in action movies and comedies from being sort of the butt of the jokes to being the stars. It was fantastic to see women who were there because of their brains and their hard work and their accomplishments. They weren't rooting against each other, but they're working together, and that's what makes you want to root for them. So it was a fantastic, positive portrayal of women, which is just not something we see enough.
All right, ladies, light them up.
Patty,
Stay still.
Just don't hit Patty anywhere important.
What?
Nothing.
Oh, you won't get in there.
Did we just catch a ghost?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We put a ghost in a box!
There we go. The film Ghostbusters, that's the reboot and Sarah Jessica Farber's favorite from last year. And we talked about, you know, Ghostbusters, Bill Murray et al., the original, did quite well. This one didn't do as well as predicted.
It did not, but I'm a total fan. I mean, these ladies, nobody had a boyfriend who told them to stay home and not bust ghosts. Nobody unzipped their coveralls to show cleavage. You know, these are all massive steps forward as far as portraying women heroes. And I also wanted to mention a couple of other female-centric films that I loved this year. Love and Friendship, which was Whit Stillman's Jane Austen adaptation, and The Dressmaker, an Australian film starring Kate Winslet. And Judy Davis.
I really liked the caller's take on this too, because in some ways it ties it to even a film like Arrival, which is like, here are these stories that are using female characters at the center of their narrative, and they're doing these powerful, amazing things, and very different films, right? Ghostbusters is a comedy after all, and it does do a little bit of just table turning, like objectifying the male
assistant.
You know, it's all fun and because games, but still, it is kind of rewriting some of those
progress is being made in tiny increments.
Well, in the form, because this is the third time we've heard now that we've had action films or sci-fi thrillers that didn't use all of the techniques, all of the stereotypical techniques that we've come to know, and have really stamped the genre. And so I don't know if this is just a palate cleanser, you know, in 2016, or if we're on the road to something different.
Well, but, you know, keep in mind, too, that when Ghostbusters was being promoted and released, there was this big kerfuffle about, you know, like, oh, you know, it's starring girls. It's not going to be the same.
You're ruining my childhood.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, let it not be thought that it was just like, oh, everybody embrace this. As you pointed out, it was not the box office success.
Yeah, we can reboot Spider-Man. Over and over, and that doesn't ruin anybody's childhood. Give me a break.
No compassion from Laura on this issue.
Well, here's one listener whose childhood was absolutely relived with the remake of, or at least the extension of a franchise. Let's listen.
My name is Steve Higdon. I live in Stallings, North Carolina. The movie I'd throw out there would be Rogue One, the new Star Wars movie.
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
What will you do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? If you continue to fight,
looking at it from a person in my situation, I really liked it. I was 6 years old when the first one came out, and I think there were a lot of things put into the movie in a pretty clever manner that were aimed at a person like me. I've got a friend who's in her 20s. The movie didn't quite resonate with her as much, but there were little things, characters, dialogue, things like that that surfaced in the 1977 movie that I thought were put in there really for folks like me. So that really appealed to me a lot.
Steve Higdon talking about the movie Rogue One, a Star Wars story, and we are talking with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boyce today on Movies on the Radio.
So I enjoyed Rogue One for the most part, and this is another one that has a female, you know, center of the narrative. But I did ask myself, as I've thought about it, and I just saw it this past week, if this was the only Star Wars film, you know, if I hadn't seen the original when it came out, would I have cared? And the answer is no, actually. It's not. To me, it does not stand on its own. I think this is one of those kind of nostalgia reboots, right? And in some ways, even La La Land, you know, it's kind of this nostalgia for an earlier form. So, but you know, the battle scenes are pretty awesome. They're kind of like World War II or Vietnam battles more than like just sci-fi battle. So, you know, it's it's worth seeing, I think, but I think on its own, not an amazing film.
Not at the top of your list.
No.
Well, you'd almost have to say, I mean, if you're going to be any kind of any part of the Star Wars franchise, you have to be referential. I mean, you can always make a science fiction movie about a time long ago.
It's a ritual. Is an important part of the franchise.
So again, reprising, if you're going to stamp Star Wars on it, you're going to have to bring back characters or make some reference. Otherwise, you can just make yourself a sci-fi movie in space, can't
right.
you?
Right. And although this film, unlike the past couple, which I had sworn off ever seeing one again, so I made an exception after I heard, in truth, this doesn't, you don't need to know the other ones in order to watch this film at least, so you don't spend the whole time trying to figure out what's going on.
No, but you would stamp it that way. In other words, that's the point. The point is, if you're not going to make just another sci-fi movie in space, then you better have some references in there for somebody.
Right.
Otherwise, why put Star Wars on it? You're going to bring them in and they're going to say, ah, we're going to see Chewie get a shave. Wouldn't that be funny?
But that would be. That's your script.
Superhero movies and comic book films continue to be a big part of Hollywood. Of course, comic book movies that stood out, at least for one listener, was Deadpool.
My name's Andres Lopez. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. My pick for the year of 2016 is Deadpool. I felt it's one of those movies where it stands a little bit different from other comic book movies. The feeling I got from watching it was the feeling I got when I would sneak into an R-rated movie when I was a kid. And this is a movie where I felt I was getting the inside jokes as an adult. And with Ryan Reynolds, the way he acted and his ability to sort of kind of display wittiness and witty banter, I really felt like the movie hit the mark.
If I never see you again, know that I love you.
When I'm finished, your mutated cells will heal anything.
But you still think we're making you a superhero? We're making you a super slave.
I didn't ask to be super, and I'm no hero. But when you find out your worst enemy is after your best girl, the time has come to be a superhero.
Hear the music.
Film is Deadpool. It was Andres Lopez' favorite from 2016, and that's what we're doing today on Movies on the Radio. Taking one last look back at 2016 in advance of the Oscars, trying to figure out what your picks are. Movies on the Radio. Deadpool, grittier than other superhero movies in some ways, I suppose.
I actually didn't see this one. I think I took a vacation from all of the superhero films this year, in part because the couple I had seen in the year before were just so bad. Yeah. There was nothing that redeemed them for me. And I think part of it, you know, when people make decisions about what they go to see, I am finding myself increasingly drawn towards the smaller. And the things we've been talking about, the more patient, the more beautiful, the more complicated, and not just, I mean, I just, they blur for me. And now I know my students see all of these films and they talk about the Marvel franchise and they talk about all the, I mean, that's a lot of how they kind of experience the movies. So it's good to know that there's one that maybe stood out of the pool.
Yeah, I am not the target audience for comic book movie.
Okay. Well, how about this next one, which is I think, a film that was, again, topical. And we started the show really talking about topical films, and I think that's how we're going to end up. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Kelly Copenhafer, and I live in Washington, D.C., and my pick for best movie of 2016 was Eye in the Sky. It was Alan Rickman's last movie and had Helen Mirren and Aaron Paul in it, and it was talking about the implications and morality and ethical questions that surround drone attacks. And just, it really just kept your attention the entire time. It made me think about, you know, is the cost of one life and collateral damage worth more than, you know, potentially intervening before a terrorist attack?
In my opinion, that was disgraceful. And all done from the safety of your chair.
I have attended the immediate aftermath of 5 suicide bombings on the ground with the bodies. What you witnessed today with your coffee and biscuits is terrible. What these men would have done would have been even more terrible. Never tell a soldier that he does not know the cost of war.
The film is Eye in the Sky. It was Kelly Copenhafer's favorite film from 2016. It's Movies on the Radio with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boyes.
Well, I guess I never exactly understood what drone warfare was. So in a way, this is a very instructional film about how decisions are made in battle, which is often from a great distance.
Yeah, so this this film is about terrorist operations in Kenya, and Helen Mirren actually plays the colonel, so it's got great bona fides in terms of performances, and obviously Alan Rickman as well. What I liked about it is that you could kind of watch this film two ways. One is it's like a thriller. It has that kind of tension and anxiety. It's well-paced. It's, you know, fast in terms of action. But on the other hand, this is a film that can really be watched in terms of having to put yourself in the position of the decision makers, right? Because we always hear about drone strikes in this kind of abstracted a few seconds on the news or a newspaper article. But to really watch and think about, this is a film you could pause and say, what would you do? And what would, and then you could pause it again 10 minutes later. What would you do now? And I think it asks incredibly important questions that are only going to get more important as we rely more and more on these kind of abstracted ways of waging war.
And it's very troubling. And I had to, wish that, maybe the president-elect would see this film, except he doesn't have the attention span, perhaps, to sit through a two-hour movie.
If you call it a movie, he'll show up. If you call it an intelligence briefing, apparently not so interested. That's his deal. Well, 2017 will be the year in which he takes office and a year in which films will continue to be made. You talked about the slow pace. I mean, let's take a look at what you think is going to happen in terms of how the awards will go. So many more, as you said, a number of films that were based on empathy, compassion, and a much slower pace. Any predictions? Any sense of how it's going to look?
Well, I mean, obviously last year one of the big kind of protests was about how white, Oscar's so white. And so I think given the richness of films by and about people of color, we are going to see a very, very different situation at the awards ceremony. I mean, it seems certain that Moonlight is going to be winning some awards.
We didn't talk about Fences, which will also, with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis. Manchester by the Sea was another film that wasn't mentioned here, but has gotten a lot of, enthusiasm from those corners.
And I think this has been a really strong year for cinematography. I mean, there have been a lot of films that just look gorgeous. I mean, La La Land is just filled with all of these beautiful, beautiful shots and so playful in terms of the camera movements. And
I mean, if you would take La La Land and Moonlight and The Witch and look at the way the cinematography is done and the way the color is handled and the way everything is manipulated. They're all so incredibly different.
Right.
It shows, the range of tools that filmmakers have is really startling.
And hopefully we'll see it. Do you think this is going to be an extension? We'll see more of this? Or was this, as I say, a palate cleanser, kind of a way to change?
I don't know. I hope so. I mean, again, I went to the movies, and saw more new films this year than I have in a long time. As someone who spends a lot of her time thinking about 30s and 40s and 50s, it's nice to be drawn into the present. And I hope the box, I hope Hollywood not just Hollywood too, filmmakers can continue to do that.
It is The State of Things, Movies on the Radio today. Marcia Gordon is a film professor at North Carolina State. Laurel Boyes, film curator at North Carolina's Museum of Art. Thank you both so much for being on the program.
Thank you,
Frank.
We'll do it again. Next time, Movies on the Radio, Westerns. We'll take your pick, your favorite Western movie. John Wayne, Quentin Tarantino, quite a range in there, and everything in between. Send us your choice for your favorite Western at sot@wnc.org, or find us at our website, which is, was that the email address? sot@wnc.org. Sure is. And we've got a website that sounds pretty much the same. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.